Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I don't have any comments today, and again, it's probably a really good thing. So it is just amazing to me to discover when studying the great men that have met adversity in war and have won, often have very similar backgrounds during their childhood. Well, in previous programs, you know, we've studied into the background of Winston Churchill. He was definitely a precocious child. He had a difficult relationship with his father. He had an unusual relationship with his mother. He was close to his brother, but he was dangerously active. And there's one scene where he jumps into a tree and falls and just about destroys his back and legs. But he was also believed that he was destined for great things. Now, when we get into this book on T.E. Lawrence, we find a very similar pattern. And so what I want to do for the next several programs, we will discuss Neds. And that is the way T.E. Lawrence was called by his family. He was called Ned. So we're going to look into Ned's young years and his family life. Now, if you desire your children to be heroic and do heroic things, this is the chapter you should read several times. It is just absolutely a great chapter on family and how family affects children. Now, today, to help me do this, the 60-plus panel is back together today, and maybe we should call it the 60-plus panel minus one because James will not be here today. But I thought it was appropriate because we've raised family. We have four lovely daughters who are married to four wonderful men, and we have 10 fantastic children, and we did everything perfectly, didn't we, dear?
Of course we did, yes.
So welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here talking about all this. So to begin, just Deborah, give me maybe some of your overall impressions of this chapter, which Korda calls the family romance.
Well, it is interesting, as you mentioned, that I thought of this. I thought, without even talking to you about this, I thought about similarities.
Yes, we've been very busy lately, I know.
Similarities with Winston Churchill's unusual family and his unusual childhood. And he did have, it's interesting that Lawrence had some adversity to overcome. But then there are some differences we can talk about where there was actually a good family bond there that maybe Winston Churchill didn't have. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I'd have to agree with that. The thing is, it's just I guess looking at Winston Churchill, you know, his father did not love him at all, even though he and his mother were married. They still had a terrible relationship. You know, in fact, that he had all these mistresses and eventually died of, you know, some sexual disease. So I think that the thing that we can look at here is they both came out of this Victorian age. And so what we read here about T.E. Lawrence is also very similar to Churchill that way. But I do think in many ways that whether T.E. Lawrence liked it or not, he still had better parents.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that. So I wanted to just open up today by just talking about the father's letter to the sons. And I think Korda, by the way, just impresses me as a writer. I mean, he has really picked it out and made it, made T.E. Lawrence more human. Yeah, made him more believable, but he opens this chapter called The Family Romance with this letter that the father, obviously in a moment of maybe self-loathing or self-examination. He writes this letter to his sons to tell them that he and his mother have never been married. He and his wife, or he and their mother, have never been married. He goes, "To my sons, but not to be opened except mother and I are dead, or when mother desires to." So there is a family shame here. But again, with Winston Churchill, there was a family shame. But actually, it was more acceptable. And so it just shows how sometimes this Victorian society could be so tough. He says, "My dear sons, I know this letter will be a cause of great sorrow and sadness to you all, as it is to me to write it. The cruel fact is this, that your mother and I were never married." And so he goes on, and this just seems so painful. It's like I can relate to Ned's father. He says, "When I first met mother, I was already married, an unhappy marriage without love on either side, though I had four young daughters. Your mother and I unfortunately fell in love with each other, and when the expose came, thought only of getting away and hiding ourselves with you, Bob, then a baby. There was no divorce between my wife and myself. How often I have wished there had been. Then I drank, and mother had a hard time, but happily I was able to cure myself of that. You can imagine or try to imagine how your mother and I have suffered all these years, not knowing what day we might be recognized by someone and our sad history published far and wide. You can think of what delight we saw, each of you growing up to manhood, for men are valued for themselves and not for their family history, except, of course, under particular circumstances. My real name when I met your mother was Thomas Robert Tigg Chapman Bart. But needless to say, I have never taken the title." So essentially, we could talk about this for a few minutes. Is T.E. Lawrence came from a very, let's say, the high aristocracy. His father was a baron. And so, but that was hidden from these boys all of their lives. And his father's name was really Thomas Chapman, and it was not Thomas Lawrence. And actually, his mother's name was Lawrence. And so the father had taken, the mother's name. So I think that's all kind of fascinating. What do you think about all
that? It is fascinating, and I guess at some point it says that they tried to get a divorce, and his wife would not give the divorce, and so they just felt there's nothing else they could do about it, and so they had to live basically in hiding all those years. They moved around in different places, but yet at the same time, it seems like they really focused on their family. It's
right.
In spite of all that, so it was interesting.
Yeah, it just seems to me. I guess the let's say the first wife. It just sounds like she was a very bitter woman, and she was not going to give him up in a sense, or she was going to punish him, because it looks like T.E. Well, it doesn't look like it's true that T.E. Lawrence was the governess for the four daughters, and the four daughters just loved her. And
it wasn't T.E. Lawrence. It was the. What was her name? I'm sorry about that.
Oh, it was the barons, the baroness.
Right.
Yeah, sorry, not T.E. Lawrence. Yes. If I said that. But the thing is the Chapmans, Mrs. Chapman, was very bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And, she didn't want to necessarily give up all the right of being the baroness either. And he was the one that had inherited being a baron. And so they were really, really quite wealthy. And I think it's also very interesting that let's say Thomas Chapman, his brothers and sisters were very sympathetic to his cause, because they knew that this woman was fiercely religious, and I guess all she wanted to do all day was kind of like pray and study, and then if they had a little bit to drink, she was kind of nuts about that, didn't want him drinking, and she ended up probably driving him to drink. But again, it's still kind of a sad situation. He goes on to say, he says, "There is one little ray of sunshine in this sad history, namely that my sister, who married my cousin Sir Montague Chapman and my brother Francis Vanistar Chapman of South Hill, my father's place, the life interest of which I agreed to sell, were always loving to me, and it is through their goodness that I have been able to leave you the greater part of the sum I have left. My brother at his death left me with £25,000, and my sister in her will has bequeathed £20,000 to me. But owing to the wording of her will, I shall not receive the £20,000 if I die before her. She is alive, but of a great invalid, and no fresh will of hers would be valid, though I know she intended and wished this £20,000 to go to you all if I should die before her. She, for many years, gave me £300 a year, with which my own fortune enabled us to live very comfortably and saved mother and me great pinching to make ends meet and also to keep me from drawing on my capital for everyday expenses. So the thing is here T.E. Lawrence's parents lived virtually in sin. I mean, that's the way the mother viewed it. That's the way his mother viewed it anyway, is that he was still married and they were living in adultery. But what's interesting, they didn't live poorly, did they?
No, they didn't.
And it is kind of interesting, I think, to find out that even though they had to move around a lot because he wanted to conceal the fact that he was a Chapman, and he still had access to all the wealth of the Chapman lands and all of that. But the thing that I think is really fascinating, even they had servants in their house. So it's not like they grew up in poverty. And I know that when I was growing up in the 50s, you know, to be an unwed mother or to be living in an adulterous situation would sometimes drive people into poverty. And so, but they did not have to live that way. So again, this is the, maybe how should we say it, the overhanging cloud that did overhang Lawrence's life. And even as Corda says, it's like a Dicksonian novel.
Yes, it is, yes.
You know, so I guess a lot of things came out of that Victorian age. So, Dickens would have probably really been able to really take advantage of this Lawrence problem. All right, one thing I think is interesting, maybe just to point out, is here we know that Ned drove himself to want to be a hero, drove himself to suffer, drove himself to have pain, and really prepared him for what he did, you know, for the Middle East as well. But one of the things I think it's interesting is that his dad, Thomas Chapman, was related to Sir Walter Raleigh, who was also kind of a hero and a really was out there doing exciting things, being a hero. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting. So one of the things that I think is amazing is you would maybe we should say this is where he and Churchill are different, because it looks like from what Corda has to tell us is that Thomas Chapman really was actively involved in all of his children's lives. And so to me, I know even in my own life, you know, my father, he really did take care of us. I mean, he did provide food for us. He did provide shelter. He did provide clothing. He wasn't necessarily actively involved in my life. I mean, there were times maybe where he was more involved, but it seems like as he got older, and of course I was one of his, I was 6 out of 7 children, so I always like to say that all the trouble my older brothers and sisters gave him, he was kind of tired when I came along. So I don't want to paint the picture that he was not involved, but he probably could have been more involved for my own sake. But it just seems like Thomas Chapman was really involved, you know, with his children. And she actually, his mom, gave him 8 sons. 3 of them died. A couple died in stillbirth, and 1 didn't live very long. But here, you know, if you look at the idea of being a baron, the one thing that you want is sons. And his wife, his first wife, never gave him any sons. She only gave him four daughters, so there was no one to pass the barony on to. And so you can see, though, that for the boys, the fact that their father was not divorced and the fact that their father had a wife alive, they couldn't be inheritors of all the estates. So I think that probably Ned or T.E. Lawrence had more problems with all of it than anybody else, any of the other brothers.
Well, it does mention in the book that it seems like he overheard something maybe when he was younger, and he had this idea that there was something different about his parents' marriage, and he at one point he even thought that maybe it wasn't really his father, and that his mother, mm-hmm. it was someone else his father. So it seemed like he was more sensitive. That is what it says here, is he was more sensitive and imaginative, whereas the other boys may not have been aware, but he was more aware that there was something different or something wrong.
Right. I mean, to me, when we read this, you know, especially this chapter about him and his family, he seemed like he was just a really smart little kid.
Yes, I mean, very very precocious. Yes,
like too smart for his own good, but he kind of figured it out that there was something wrong with his parents. But I think it's interesting. Corder brings out that he kept a secret. He did not go around and talk about it even with his brothers.
No, he really loved his brothers, and he wanted to protect them in some ways.
Yeah.
So that is interesting.
Yeah, I know. When we were growing up, though, it's probably not fair to say, but if we found out anything, we were always telling each other stuff. So anyway, the other thing, just maybe as another aside here, and I can just make a few comments here, that the boys were definitely raised Protestant. You know, their father would have been part of the high Anglican Church, but their mother was. Scottish, and she was. It's so interesting. It's almost like Winston Churchill and his nanny womb. Is that, you know, she was Scottish, if you remember, and she was not part of the High Anglican Church. She was part of the Low Anglican Church, and you know they hated all the Roman Catholic, you know, trappings that went along with Mass and all that. So it seems like you know they were raised with religion. And I think that was kind of fascinating to learn, that they were very raised with religion, but it was came more from the mother and her kind of like evangelical, you know, view of religion. And of course, there's nothing wrong with seeing the Bible as literal, because we know the Bible should be taken literal. But I just wanted to read this part here on page 121 about the father's character, even though, you know, he was, you know, very much in the High Anglican Church would have been considered an adulterer. Here's what Corda says about him, and I think this is probably what really helped, let's say, Ned become the man that he became. He says, this is what Corda says on page 121. It says, three things are absolutely clear about Chapman. He was a gentleman in every meaning of that word. Two, he was an enthusiastic sportsman, more interested in fox hunting and shooting birds than in farming. And three, he was a caring, wonderful father. And so if you look at it, that is where the big difference is between what, let's say, Ned experienced and what Winston Churchill experienced, because it was just really clear, and even the father said it, he just didn't care for Winston. Wouldn't even go see things, you know, that Winston was doing. But it just seems like Thomas Chapman was actively involved in the kids' lives, in their sports lives, in their athletic abilities, in their education. And again, I think they even knew, you know, the way he was. I'm going to read from page 135 here, just real quickly, about all the sons and what they agreed. It says, It says, this is the middle of page, towards the middle or end of the middle of the page. It says, all the Lawrence boys agree that their fathers retained a quiet authority in the family and that he could be very firm when necessary, sometimes intervening when he thought Sarah was being unduly harsh and invariably making the bigger decisions that affected their lives. And so that's really good. So let's talk a little bit about the mother's character.
Yes, well, she sounds like she was the very strict one, and she really worked hard, as you say, to train the children with religion, and but she was the disciplinarian, is what they say. There's even some question. This chapter talks about there were some questions as to that. That he may have been, there have been whippings by Sarah rather than Thomas. But the fact was, it says at that time it was a practice that they did do, a corporal punishment. That was common. It wasn't like he was being abused. So,
right.
So it doesn't sound like he was unusually abused.
Yeah, from his perspective, he may have seemed that way. But if you would compare what Ned went through and what Winston Churchill went through,
right, yes,
it'd be completely different.
Yes, because they say that it was common at those schools. They called them public schools,
right,
for that kind of caning to go on.
Yes, and the thing is too. I think Corder brings out a really good point about the father, is he did go to Eton,
mm-hmm,
and so he probably would have been caned just as bad as Winston Churchill was, and so he let Sarah do all the discipline because, he probably had enough and, he was afraid that he would maybe be too hard. And I know that's even true today. I know there's a few men that I know that grew up and they were pretty physically abused, and it's really hard for them to spank a child even if the child needs spanked. But, I think that's probably really clear about Thomas is, that he probably let the discipline up to them. Now, Lawrence thought his mother went overboard, but if you really look at what the other boys said, they don't agree with that because they didn't feel like she treated them that way. And I think that the thing about Lawrence is he probably deserved more because he was so anti-law, he was so anti-rules, and we even see that when he was in the military, even in Aqaba. I mean, he made that whole decision on Aqaba, didn't even go to his authorities to get approval. And so I can't imagine, I guess in some ways I'm really glad we had four girls.
Well, any precocious child, and as sounds like he was, would be a challenge. Yes, yeah. He does sound like he was a real challenge in terms of he had such strong interests and he wanted to do what he wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So I can imagine it would be hard to train and educate a child like that.
Right. And, of course, then Corder also brings out he was probably most like her.
Right.
Yeah, so she was probably pretty precocious herself. Well, I just want to read a little bit. This is page 124, so all of you out there listening, focus on this page. It says, Sarah Lawrence, who would present Thomas Chapman with five sons, of which T.E. Lawrence was the second, lived until 1959, dying at the age of 98. She was, even in her youth, a woman of firm principles and amazing determination. Her most famous son, T.E. Lawrence, spent a lifetime trying to fathom his relationship with his mother and never quite succeeded. He saw in her much of himself. One friend of his, a woman, remarked, T.E. got his firm chin and the piercing blue eyes from his mother, his strength of character and ability to martyr himself in the desert. She had those martyr qualities. She forced herself. Lawrence himself would write of Sarah, "No trust ever exists between my mother and myself. I always felt that she was laying siege to me and would conquer if I left a chink unguarded." It says, almost everybody who met Sarah commented on the intensity of her personality and on the indomitable will, as well as her refusal to compromise on most moral issues. So I think Corda also brings out that she probably went overboard on T.E. Lawrence to assuage her own guilt of being an adulteress, because she knew that she was living with a married man and had eight children to him. So that would be even shocking, I think, for some people today. So,
yes, that must have been very difficult for her, and it must have been very difficult for her with her moral, like it says here, her refusal to compromise on most moral issues. So imagine that she had a lot of guilt with that.
Yeah, on that video that I saw of Korda's, it's really good. It says that actually T.E. Lawrence had a very strong moral character. I mean, he really was a moral person and believed in morality. And certainly he would believe in sexual morality as well. So he came out of, you know, she didn't do a bad thing for him. You know, she probably really helped him. Well, as always, in this poor program, we are running out of time for today's program. So, sorry people out there, but that's all we have time for today's program. Now, next time, we'll continue our discussion of this chapter, The Family Romance, to gain a better idea of why Lawrence drove himself to be such a hero. Now, remember, for this current series of programs, we are using Michael Korda's book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. If you have not started reading it, don't miss this opportunity. You can buy this book at Amazon.com, and you can also find a good used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. We're kind of lacking in comments these days. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.